It's been a minute. Welcome back, analysis listeners. Welcome back, Jordan Harris from Denver, Colorado. What's happening, bud?
Oh, not too much, man. Thanks for having me back. I was starting to think you didn't want me on the pod anymore.
No, man. I've just been locked inside three layers of Detroit City basement for the last couple months. So trying to.
I'm a persuasive guy. You just needed some persuading, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You're a very persuasive guy. You know what you want. You go for it, man. You're just relentless. So welcome back in. Excited to talk to him about a movie that you and Mike Hammond turned me on to, and were very adamant that I go see a movie called Barbarian.
Yeah, that's right. It's a horror flick. The horror genre is one that I wouldn't consider myself a huge fan of, but there was buzz around this movie, and that buzz was, hey, just go see this movie. Don't know anything about it. Don't ask anybody. Don't talk to anybody. Just go see it. And that's what I did. I didn't know anything about it. Hadn't seen a trailer, and I had a really good time.
Yeah, I gotta give credit to Mike Hammond, because he had texted us and said, just got a Barbarian, quintessential movie theater movie. Go see it. Don't read anything about it. So that was kind of the buzz around this movie. You were saying it had buzz, and it did. And everyone, the narrative everyone was saying is, don't read anything about it. Go in. And the trailer does its service, because it's very vague in terms of what's happening. Like, you know that there's a girl who shows up at an Airbnb. There's Bill Skarsgård, who you know is super creepy from the It movies, and he was Pennywise. And so, and then there's some sort of screaming and jumbled cameras in the dark, almost. The trailer gave me Blair Witch vibes, with kind of like running around in a dark cavernous area. I guess it wasn't a handheld cam, but still.
I didn't even see the trailer after the fact. So you describing it right there was more input than I had received for it. But even having someone tell you, just go see a movie, you know, don't look it up, don't watch the trailer, sets a certain type of expectation itself. But it was fun to go in blind, because I found myself sort of guessing, like, what does this mean to not know anything about a movie?
Yeah.
But it still I thought landed and executed on the surprises that we went through, and the different tonal shifts of the movie and the paths that it took us down.
Yeah, I'm really excited to unpack some of that stuff. And I think we're so starved for creative content. It's been so many retreads and dust offs and reboots. And I mean, Halloween 14 is coming out very soon, and it's the spooky season. So to hear something that's original and that you want to experience it with fresh eyes was something that just gets movie turds like me and you jacked up. So yeah, especially
in this genre too, especially in the horror genre, it's almost synonymous with just carbon copy, cheap thrills, jump scares.
We did, you know, every now and again you get a gem, right? And I think A24 has been doing really good work here, and they had Hereditary, and they also had Midsommar and some psychological thrillers. I don't think this necessarily fits into the psychological thriller space as much, but definitely a horror film that has something to say. So that, let's start there with just the structure of this movie and how it keeps you guessing. Because one thing that I had written down, drink your drink and sing the sound the siren every time I mentioned my notes, but one thing I had written down was, this is like a Russian doll of a plot. Like, you just keep discovering new things. Like, just when you think you have the movie figured out, it completely transports you to an LA highway, and you're like, wait, what the fuck? Like, I'm watching a whole different movie now. And then it transports you back to the 60s in Detroit. So yeah, you're constantly guessing. But I think for me, when I first saw the movie and I was leaving with all that expectation and the buzz that I was hearing and the text thread that we had going, I was a little unsure of how I felt about the movie, because I thought the first two acts were super strong and the third act left me wanting. So that's a little about how I took in the movie with all the tonal shifts. What did you feel overall with it?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this movie with all that you described, tonal shifts, style shifts, even the way the story is told, shifting around. And to me, it was impressive that the overall experience was a lot of fun because of all those different dynamics. And on top of that, you kind of have a director who was trying to make his name and show off his expertise with some kind of directorial like tricks and shots mm-hmm. and paying homage to former movies that came before this one. So there's a lot going on and they're trying to subvert expectations. But I actually pretty much totally agree with you on that. I was super into the first portion of the movie, which plays out like a thriller slash romance slash
masterclass in suspense, really.
Yeah, and then... which I'm super into. Mm-hmm. The second portion of the movie shifting to more of a comedy mm-hmm. until it intertwines back to the first portion of the movie. And that shift actually really worked for me too. I thought it was done brilliantly and I was super into it at that point. Then going into the third act, it kind of, to me, shifted to more of like a monster movie flick where there are some gross out gore scenes. People are getting their arms ripped off and beaten with thumbs going through the eyes. And that didn't work quite as well for me. And part of the issue with shifting around styles and tones so much is if there's one for me or for you that you're prone to liking and there's a style that you're not, you're going to love the parts that you liked and
yeah,
be, you know, let you feel let down by the parts that you're not as into. And that kind of is sort of the nature of the beast with a movie like this. But it didn't ruin it for me at the end.
No, it's a satisfying enough ending, but I think the movie gets progressively worse. And so when you're leaving a movie theater and the last notes that you hear are a little flat, you kind of go, you know, and then it took me a few hours and some dialogue with you guys and some different people and, you know, some reflection a few days later to be like, oh, I actually really feel that was one of the more enjoyable cinematic experiences I've had in a while. So
you thought it got progressively worse as yeah. in
I just okay in, so let's so, start yeah so we have a girl and she shows up on a dark street in the D, of course, the super scary place. What was the one where the guy was blind and it was such a desolate street in Detroit, he could basically just kidnap people and it was like don't scream or don't breathe or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he ends up like, he has the woman in the, he's like trying to impregnate the woman because anyway, but yeah, there's like this, like a former military guy who's blind, but he lives on such a vacant street in Detroit that it's like no one can hear you scream.
Or yeah. A convenient setting for horror movies.
Abandoned neighborhoods. And yeah, Detroit is the new like deep South Texas that was in the 70s. It's just like ripe for these horror films to take place. But anyway, I digress. So she shows up. She has an Airbnb. Probably one of the more unbelievable parts of this movie is that like she can't find an Airbnb anywhere in the area because there's a doctor's conference or there's a medical conference. And so she can only take this Airbnb like in the most... it just run down part of Detroit. And I'm like, just go to Ferndale. Like it's a couple minutes down the road. I'm sure there's an Airbnb, but you know, we're two Michigan turds. But so anyway, she meets Bill Skarsgård. And I think for me, it was really well done. And the casting is very important. The casting of both the men with Bill Skarsgård and with Justin Long, because you see him and you immediately distrust him. Like they put you right in the perspective of Tess, the girl, because he invites her in and he's like, hey, I wouldn't sleep out there or I wouldn't go back outside if I were you. This is kind of a scary neighborhood. And you just know him from his other role. So you immediately distrust him. And, you know,
he kind of just has that look to him too.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of a
style of talking. And yeah, even as a couple of dudes, you know, I still had my guard up.
Like, yeah, I'm like, don't drink that motherfucker's wine. And he's trying to make you tea. I'm like, that dude is definitely going. And like, the audience is right there with the character. And he even says, when they're sitting down and he starts to earn her trust over the conversation with the documentary, but he's like, do I look like a creep to you? And it's like, yeah, motherfucker, you do. And it's just
this
like
the situation is creepy.
Yeah. But it's like this immediate distrust that women have right now with just men, and you know, it's just there's just a lot of mistrust always between the genders. Yeah, well, yeah, always true. That's true. But it's it was so I think that was done really well, and the suspension was built really well. And then you start to get
kind of turns into a romance a little bit too. But you, even as that's happening, it's
you're like,
you're kind of, is this legit or like, where is this going? And at the same time, creepy things are happening throughout the house, kind of in a typical horror style where doors are opening unexplained or doors are screaming, closing.
Yeah, night terrors and night.
Yeah. And so it definitely keeps you on your toes.
And that leads you all the way to her getting locked in the basement. You're just like, this might be just me from when I was a teenager, but I'm not going into a basement without some sort of door ajar situation happening out of the get. Like, I just have an immediate mistrust of the basement walk down. So she goes down there, gets locked.
Creepy basement I was in like that was probably yours in high school.
Correct. So yeah. There was a lot of vomit on the floors. Yeah. So she goes down into this creepy basement. She has no choice. She has to hang out there for multiple hours, starts looking around, and she finds a rope, which leads to a pulley, which opens up this door. Cavernous secondary basement in here. Again, no fucking way. No fucking way I'm going down there. But she feels the need. Sex dungeon room. But the suspense, like at that point, you're like, oh fuck. Like, is this the dudes? Is this like Bill Skarsgård? I think his character's name was Keith. It's like, is Keith just like preying on women in the middle of this? And then then all of a sudden. The whole snoop around with Keith and then the brains bashing against the wall. You're like, holy shit. Like that was an incredible build of suspense and absolutely subverting your expectations almost at every turn. I was really into the movie at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And as soon as that happens, total cutscene, car driving down the highway in California, Justin Long and his car jamming out to whatever song that was. I don't know what it is, but it's, you're just like, what? Last thing I saw was a dude getting his brain smashed against the wall by a giant naked monster lady.
Monster lady nakedness.
Yep. What is going on? Mm-hmm. Now, what is going on?
So then you get into this whole, and obviously it's very ripe with metaphor and allegory, but it's, you get in this whole sexual allegations, and the more you spend time with Justin Long, the more you're like, oh, this is actually the fucking creep. Like, and that's, and that's obviously a comment that the director's making is, the monsters in our world don't just identify themselves with a broad sign. It's like, actually like the smaller kind of more goofy guy is actually the bigger monster to the world, because the more you hear about him and his situation with the actress that he was in a TV show with, the more you're like, oh, he absolutely assaulted this girl in some way or another.
Yeah, and it takes you a while to get there, because when we first get introduced to the character, he's taking a phone call where he's basically finding out that he's getting Me Too'd. Mm-hmm. And for a while you're wondering, like, did he really do something? Like, he doesn't seem like,
and you kind of trust him because it's Justin Long.
Yeah, and at the same time, you're thinking back to the first part of the movie and realizing that, for like a situation like Tess is in as a woman, or this other actress person that we haven't even met, for them, they're facing a similar type of situation, a potential similar outcome from a risky situation that they might be in, whether it's on like a film set or meeting a guy in an Airbnb. And you just kind of, it kind of puts you in their shoes as a man and makes you realize that, like, you might be facing something, a negative outcome from one of these situations. And it can be so hard to navigate that like social aspect and find out what's really not.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, we find out that, Justin Long is basically just a total creep. Like,
he's a fucker, dude. Well, it's what really tips you off is the conversation at the bar when he's wasted with his friend, and he's like,
I absolutely loved that conversation.
I see what I want, man. I know. I mean, like, yeah, did she kind of put up a little bit of a fight? Yeah, but I'm persistent, dude. I'm a persistent dude. And you're like, oh yeah, this is that type of mindset is fucking toxic to this world, right? And so he goes to his Airbnb and he sees the people's stuff and obviously just starts tearing into it with just like a total sense of privilege. A really small detail that they had, which I liked, was when he tries to log into her computer. He tries to log into her laptop and he obviously doesn't know the fucking passcode. Like, to think that you could just randomly guess a passcode is absurd. And then he just tries it once, gets frustrated, and just like tosses it petulantly like it's a Game Boy or something. It just like launches this chick's fucking computer across the room. I'm just like, oh, this guy is a fucking world-class douche. And then he discovers the basement, right? Because
the movie's basically a comedy at this point. And Justin Long is absolutely unaware, unafraid of this creepy situation. It's totally the opposite of Tess, who has her guard up the whole time. Yeah. Justin Long's just waltzing into this situation, which kind of shows his attitude and privilege and worldview, where the last thing on his mind is that something bad would happen to him.
Yeah.
So his whole bit, right, is this Airbnb is actually his property, and he needs money now that he's being sued and he's losing.
He's got to liquidate. So he's going to liquidate the probably the least valuable thing that he owns is this fucking middle of the Detroit fucking rundown shack.
But he wants to get as much money as he can. So his whole thing is he's Googling, like, can you count? He finds the creepy basement too. And his first thought is, oh damn, this adds square footage to my house. Can I use this as a selling point?
Yeah.
So he's waltzing down the creepy hallway.
That's actually kind of the funniest part of this whole act too, is him just going into the room with the camera and the rusty ass bed, and everyone else is horrified, but he's like, oh shit. And he's working around all of the camera equipment, trying to get the square footage of the room. It's like, oh my God, this guy could give a fuck about the horrors that have happened in this place.
Yeah, and it was funny. I mean, it was making me laugh. And
well, and it shows you the difference, because when Tess goes down there originally, like, she doesn't want to go down there. She's going there out of empathy for Keith. Like, she's going there to try to save somebody. And when he's going down there, it's totally just out of profit and out of self-benefit. Right. Yeah. So it's just like showing you the two polar characters that you're dealing with down here in the basement.
And at this point, you know, things are coming to a head, and there's going to be a collision from the first part of the movie to mm-hmm. this path that Justin Long is on.
And that's when we meet.
Yeah.
Our famous nude monster. So yeah, this is where you're starting to see these videos as he's getting deeper and deeper into this, and he starts going, what the fuck? He's seeing the cages and shit, and you start seeing this looped video of this woman breastfeeding, and yeah, then he gets thrown down in the cage, and yeah, it's drinking milk out of the bottle, and a lot of grotesque scenery, him getting fed by the nipple. And that's when Tess is able to escape the basement. And that leads me to actually the funniest part of the movie isn't him measuring the walls of the sex room, but it's when she is dirty and disheveled and gets out of the Detroit City house and goes up to the police to try to get them to come in, and they just think she's a crackhead. Like, that's the most realistic part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're like, this lady's not great. Actually, the most illegal thing is you breaking that window, ma'am.
it's another convenient setting for Detroit, where they're just, yeah, you can, you know, the director can envision, like, how do I explain this where this woman gets out of this house and she needs help and she finds the police, and oh, in Detroit, they probably just think she's a crackhead.
It's just, they're so ravenous, like, yeah, with crack. Yeah. Yeah, yep. They're just like, yeah, you know what? Okay, there's some other bigger problem happening down the street. We're gonna have to leave this crackhead. It's just like, but then, you know, the heroine goes back in again to out of empathy again for this guy, and I think that's
of course doesn't know at this point who Justin Long really is.
Yeah, yeah, she's just a person who cares for other people, right?
Yeah,
and you know, that's when I really think the movie takes off in terms of its social commentary, because it's smash cuts to this guy in Detroit in the 60s. And his name was, what was his name? Frank. It smash cuts to this guy in the 60s, and his name is Frank. And he's driving around this beautiful, lush Detroit neighborhood, and he's putting on different costumes, different work costumes to go in and unlatch women's doors. And he's this fucking monster of a guy. And you realize that he lives in the house, and he's been assaulting women quietly as the city of Detroit erodes. He's been this menace all over the city, and Justin Long meets him as he's trying to escape this place. And Justin Long is like playing these videos back of these women's being assaulted. And he looks at Frank and he's like in disgust, but really Frank's looking at Justin Long, seeing his previous self. You know, Frank is seeing a mirror of himself, a younger version of himself. And Frank becomes so disgusted, laying decrepit in his bed, that he ends up killing himself. Right.
And so that's an interpretation of it. I'm not sure that was, like, you know, spelled out
Oh, I thought that was pretty clear. What did you think it was?
I don't know, actually. It was one of those things where you weren't sure, because at this point, Frank is bedridden. He can't move.
He's being cared for by this thing.
And presumably kept alive by this thing off of her weird breast milk being bottle fed. So he's now, you know, a captive to the monster that he created. And when Justin Long shows up, he's just trying to get Justin Long to give him a gun so that he can end his life. But I didn't get the sense that he was happy-go-lucky, fine with everything until he saw Justin Long, and then that all of a sudden made him question.
I have to remember the beats of, because I thought he had the ability to potentially get that gun before Justin Long gave it to him, but I thought being in the presence of Justin Long and feeling and seeing and being reminded of his past horrors that he put onto the world, that was motivation enough for him to murder himself. That was at least my interpretation. But these are these two men that are meeting each other, and they are mirrors of each other, right? And that's where I think that the title of the movie comes in, and that's the barbarian is what's within Frank and what's within Justin Long, right? That's what's within his character, AJ. And I think the easy thing to do is be like the monster of the movie is this naked woman, but really like this, that's a victim. Like this person, that thing is a victim, and that's a woman that definitely, a product of these monsters that kind of walk amongst us.
Yeah, clearly in sort of the like traditional sense that she is a monster. She's like physically strong but clearly like that's what they're playing with there, is that the real barbarian, the monsters who make the monster, are the Keiths and the Justin Longs. And even though I think as the viewers, we understand them as cut from the same cloth, I think if you are Justin Long in that movie, if you're AJ, he doesn't see himself
as he says it multiple times. Well, he's at the bonfire with the other homeless guy, that the nice homeless man that just wanted to help out. And you know, he says, I think he says something along the lines of, it's been a few days since I've seen the movie, but he says, I'm not a bad person. I'm a good person that just made some mistakes. I've made some mistakes.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think Keith, you know, would be that delusional. Mm-hmm. Justin Long is always trying to sort of soften what he maybe knows underneath is the things that he did wrong. But us as the viewer, when they come and collide, we can tell that they're cut from the same cloth.
I don't know. I like my version better because it's a little more poetic. I think either way, Justin Long thinks of himself as different. He thinks of himself as a good person that's made some mistakes. He, even in his drunkest of states, is somewhat admitting his faults. That's the only kind of real or truth that you get from this guy. And then, you know, every time he has an opportunity to choose the righteous or the correct path, he does the selfish and douchey thing, and it's his undoing in the end.
Culminates with him literally throwing Tess off the top of a structure as a way to distract the monster from coming after him. So, and then even after that, right? So he rushes down. The monster and Tess are laying on the ground. Tess is alive, and he's trying to convince her that he was saving her.
Yeah, he had to do it. It was for both of us. And he still in those moments, in his final moments, is trying to justify horrible actions, right? And that's, you know, obviously that's the filmmakers do going an extreme route to say that that's a lot of the mental gymnastics that people that do harm unto others do, right? They'll just do a lot. And then you even see it with his buddy trying to convince him that, you know, he's the one that's actually that's been wronged, right? His buddy's trying to convince him otherwise. And, you know, there's just different ways that he is trying to spin a narrative so he can live with himself.
Yeah. He even ends up shooting Tess at one point earlier in the movie, sort of ends up being as more of an accident, I would say. When he shoots her, he doesn't know it's her, but it kind of also just goes to that, like, you know, his self-preservation actions, where he cares more about himself first, that he doesn't even take a second to think who that might be. It's like, shoot first, figure it out later.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's later. A good point. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very reactive and apologetic, which is another character trait of his, right? So I really liked the casting of in all the core players. Shoot, even the scary nude woman. Like, good job, scary nude lady. I don't know who you are, but
who was actually played by a dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, so, there you go. That makes sense. You know, hey, body suits, right? All the weight, all the rage, just as Darren Aronofsky. But Justin Long, I think, was he's done some really interesting movies, especially in the horror space. And like Jeepers Creepers, that was a movie when we were in high school that came out, and not a great movie. I don't think that's super original. That's just more of your fastball horror film. But he did a movie called Tusk that was made by Kevin Smith. Very bizarre kind of horror psychological movie, and now this. And I just always think he's made some kind of creative choices within his career, and I thought this was a really interesting character for him.
He's definitely perfectly cast for this, and also because of what people think about him just generally as a person, like not only as an actor but as a person. He kind of carries a certain perception that fit in perfectly with this movie in terms of him being sort of like a happy-go-lucky, easygoing good guy, which the movie then could subvert your expectations on. But he played that like potentially likable guy very well until you find out his true nature.
I like when films do that, where they like really take into consideration the persona of the person that they're casting. I think that they did that really well with Promising Young Woman, another movie which deals with a lot of the same themes. I think that movie was more effective than this one. It had three good acts, but I think that a lot of the guys at the top of that movie, there were these super notable guys that were in different movies where that kind of dealt with getting women drunk and hooking up with them. They were also super likable personalities and trusting faces. And so I think that Emerald Fennell worked with that in Promising Young Woman, and I think this movie did that as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison. I hadn't made that connection.
Yeah, so overall, I mean, like you said, I think it's definitely worth a watch. I think it was really creative. I think it's great for some scares. I think the thrills were pretty thrilling, especially in Act One. I think it was actually the most tense and the most scary when we were getting to that monster. So I think overall, a solid movie, and shout out to Detroit.
Yeah, for sure. I liked it. I mean, it's one of those ones that if someone tried to copycat it now, I don't think it would work that well. So hopefully it stands as an original movie that has some staying power, maybe a cult classic type film. But overall, I thought it was definitely enjoyable. It's one that I went and saw it by myself, so looking forward to catching it on streaming and seeing what the wife thinks about it, maybe watching it with friends, getting a couple more viewings in. So
yeah,
it's a positive.
My boo-boo travels way too much to watch a movie about deranged dungeons inside of Airbnbs. So I did explain to her in every detail all of these plot points. It took me about 25 minutes. So she was like, wow, that sounds really interesting. Glad that you told me that, so I don't have to go see that now. We'll just run Hocus Pocus 2 back for this Halloween season. Are you are all the Home Goods pumpkins out on the porch? Are you ready for that?
No, I think that's going to be this weekend spooky plan. Going to go hit up the pumpkin patch and decorate the house a bit. And yeah, haven't got there yet. We're going to do that soon.
What's Jackson going to be for Halloween? I think he's scary naked lady or what?
No, he's got this book where it's about a sloth, a sloth detective.
Oh, and isn't that made by your friend?
Book. Yeah, and Jackson has a little stuffed animal sloth that he loves. So the sloth name's Pocket, so he wants to be Pocket for Halloween.
Cool, man. Are you going to make that yourself, sloth? Or do they make detective sloth at Halloween USA?
Well, yeah, they do make little sloth costumes for kids, and I was looking on Amazon today, actually, and they're like sold out right now. So it's kind of like that Christmas Eve. God damn it. I got to get this toy for my kid that I've been talking about now. So
oh, man.
I don't know if we're going to have to make something or
what kind of What kind of Vince Vaughn, Jake Gyllenhaal comedy are you writing right now? Gotta get my son a sloth costume for Halloween.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. I'm the worst dad ever.
Yeah, exactly. Starring Jordan Harrison Sinbad. But, yeah. All right. Well, I hope you pull it off. Send me a picture once you do it. Otherwise, you better get to selling, buddy. Appreciate you coming back on, man.
Awesome, man. It was a good time.
Appreciate you guys for listening. Don't forget to wash your hands, stay safe, smash the subscribe button so you get alerts when we give you guys new fun movies to talk about. We'll see you down the road. Bye.
Here we go. So get your